In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production in association with City News.
When Ukraine was invaded by Russia in late February, many of the world's democracies raced to support it. With aid, with weapons, and with lots and lots of words. At the same time, some of the people living in those democracies decided they would support Ukraine more directly by packing their bags and heading over to join the fight.
I'm just doing, like, you know, what I think is the right thing.
I think it's our responsibility, my responsibility, to help those people. If that means sacrificing blood or life to give them that.
You can't just sit, you know, at work, at home, and feel okay.
It isn't known with certainty just how many Canadians are currently fighting in Ukraine, but the number is well over 500. They even have their own brigade. But it isn't the Canadian-Ukrainian brigade that we're discussing today. That brigade is directly associated with the Ukrainian military and organized with help from embassies and from politicians. The brigade we are discussing today is none of those things. But it is run by a Canadian. It has several Canadians in its ranks, and it is right on the front lines of the war. That's what we do know about it. There are a lot of other questions that are much murkier, harder to answer, and much more dangerous. Does this brigade have enough weapons and ammo? Is their leader stable and trustworthy? What about accommodations and supplies? What actually is their military objective, and why are they selling merch on Facebook? Yes, the Norman Brigade, as it is known, is not your average group of foreign fighters. So, who are they? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Tom Blackwell is a senior reporter with the National Post. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you start, and I understand that this is not the gentleman's real name, but why don't you start by telling me who is Herulf and what do we know about him?
Herulf is a Canadian. He's from Quebec, and he is the commander of a foreign fighter unit in Ukraine, one of these groups of foreigners who came to fight on behalf of Ukraine against the Russians. And his unit is called the Norman Brigade, which actually has some significance to Canada itself. It's sort of an ode to the settlers from Normandy in France who came to New France, you know, a few hundred years ago. And he is operating in southeast Ukraine. And this Norman Brigade is not, well, arguably not part of the official sort of foreign legion that the Ukrainian government's set up called the International Legion for the Territorial Defense of Ukraine. It's somewhat independent, I guess, although he insists that it does have an arrangement with the Ukrainian military, but it is sort of a standalone unit.
I want to get into that in a minute, the overall big picture of foreign fighters in Ukraine and all the different groups and how they do or do not work in concert with the Ukrainian military. But first, about the Norman Brigade specifically, what is it, I guess? Do we know how and why it began? Like, where did it come from is perhaps a better question.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was more or less the creation of this fellow Herulf, along with some other military veteran friends of his, to you know, respond to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Now, Hrolf is also, he has another connection to Ukraine. He has a wife and children who are Ukrainian and live in Ukraine. So that's sort of part of his, I guess, motivation to do this. But it was essentially built up as a response to the Russian invasion. And, you know, they've created a Facebook page and started raising money and recruiting fighters from literally from around the world. And, you know, they're even like selling merchandise to raise money, that kind of thing.
How does that process work? First, unofficially with the Norman Brigade, like somebody sees a Facebook post and reaches out, say, hey, I want to fight too. Let me in. Like what happens?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, I mean, and this is in terms of the broader kind of phenomenon of people from places like Canada who want to go over and fight. I mean, I'm told there are a lot of people who have no military experience or very little military experience that have gone over there. But also there's people who not only are military veterans, you know, that they were in regular armies or other military units in their countries, but, you know, also have actual combat experience. And I certainly talked to a few of those who initially at least joined the Norman Brigade, and a couple of them told me that they had started to go through kind of the official route with this international legion set up by the Ukrainian government, and that was taking a while. Mm-hmm. Then they came across the Norman Brigade online and got in touch with the organizers and thought these guys sound legit, so I'll join them because that seems like a faster route to sort of getting into the fight, I guess. But that's essentially how it's happening. It's sort of recruiting online, essentially.
In terms of the big picture beyond the Norman Brigade, what do we know about Canadians fighting in the Ukraine? Do we know how many and who's going and why?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a murky picture. It's something that I've been trying to sort of track over the last few months, and it's difficult to get a really clear handle on what's going on. I think partly because those who do go over, and at least most of them anyways, don't sort of really publicize in a big way that they are there and what they're doing, you know, for security reasons, for their own security and sort of what they in the military they call operational security and also for safety of families back here in Canada. What I've been told by the International Legion is that, and this is a month or so ago, they said, you know, at that point more than 500 Canadians had joined up officially. I was told by the International Legion that there was actually a separate Canadian unit within the Legion called the Canadian Ukrainian Brigade. It's unclear to me how formal a unit that is. But anyways, it certainly seems like, you know, hundreds of Canadians have gone over to Ukraine to fight.
How do they get there?
Well, I mean, basically, you can't fly into Ukraine. The airspace is closed to civilian air traffic. So basically, people fly to Poland and then by ground into Ukraine, and then make their way to whatever unit or organization they may or may not have made arrangements with ahead of time.
About the Norman Brigade in particular, then, to bring it back to the focus of your reporting, you mentioned they're in southeastern Ukraine. What are they doing there? What are conditions like? Like, can you just sort of describe the scenario?
Sure. And I should point out, first of all, that when I initially interviewed Hrolf, the commander of the Norman Brigade, I agreed at his request not to disclose exactly where he's operating, you know, again, for his security, for the security of the unit that he's with. I mean, there's a perception on the behalf of a lot of the foreign fighters that they would be specific targets of the Russian forces, that they would like to capture or you know, unfortunately kill these foreign fighters for sort of propaganda reasons. As far as I can tell, they are working with Ukrainian military in this region of the country. It's a bit controversial, depending on who you talk to, whether they have any kind of formal relationship with the Ukrainian military. Pressed on that point, Hrolf told me that they are sort of embedded with a local territorial defense force of the of Ukraine, which is sort of the volunteer force that mm-hmm. was built up after Russia invaded, where, you know, where they, you probably heard about, where they, you know, basically ordinary people sort of joined up and underwent military training. So and he says that they do have, you know, contact with the Ukrainian defense ministry. It's unclear exactly how formal their arrangement is, but anyways, yeah. He does seem to be working with the Ukrainian military. And the first time I talked to him, he described an operation that he and one of the other members of the Norman Brigade went on to recapture a village that the Russians had captured. And that was, it was quite a tale that he told about that. You know, it was a pretty hairy experience. He described it as, you know, like nothing that Western militaries have been involved in places like, you know, Afghanistan and the Middle East, you know, where essentially you had a modern military fighting against insurgents. This was a completely different thing, you know, fighting against another modern military with artillery and air power and tanks and et cetera, et cetera.
I'd love to know a little bit more about Harulf himself and how he leads the brigade. I know you've talked to some former members of the brigade. I know they describe this particular unit as pretty unusual, I guess. What do they say about him?
Yeah, I mean, and as I mentioned, my first contact with him was an interview, you know, about this operation he went on. And then subsequent to that, I heard from people who had initially joined the Norman Brigade or said they were going to, and then since then have basically abandoned them and gone to the official International Legion. And yeah, they had, and this includes his sort of second in command, who was working from Canada initially on the sort of fundraising and recruitment effort, and then in April came over to Ukraine. I guess one of their complaints was that, you know, he had been there for a couple of months by the time people I talked to made it to Ukraine. And you know, they said there seemed to be very, very little groundwork laid for all these people that were being recruited. Mm. You know, that no one in authority in Ukraine seemed to know anything about the Norman Brigade. And they eventually got to a city that was sort of like a staging point where they were supposed to undergo training before going to sort of the front with where Harulf is based. And they said, you know, they were initially had this accommodation that they described as like a dungeon, or they were sleeping on hard floors. They got like two meals a day, and sometimes it was just this sort of thin soup. You know, there were, even though they were supposed to be training, there were very, very few weapons amongst them. And at one point, there were like 27 or 30 of these recruits. And these guys were all, or almost all, you know, military veterans, combat veterans, who had sort of given up their civilian life to come over. And they got to this staging point, and there were like seven AK-47s amongst the 30 of them, and you know, very little ammunition. And one of these people I spoke to said, you know, it's like 30 rounds of ammunition per person. And with an automatic rifle, you use that up in no time. And they're saying, you know, certainly to go into battle against the Russians, it would be like suicide to be armed like that. You know, I heard from someone who came a bit earlier than these guys, who said they met up with, at this sort of city, which was like the staging point, they met up with Harulf, you know, who revealed that there were weapons for 30% of them. Now, Harulf, you know, challenges this story, but the story I was told is that those who were not assigned weapons were told to go sort of to somewhat near the front and dig trenches, you know, without weapons, without body armor. It was a situation of what they described as very poor training facilities, very little weaponry. I guess when they sort of push back a bit from against Harulf about some of this stuff, things sort of became more heated. Huh. And I can tell you a story about him sort of coming up to this staging base and the confrontation he had. But that's when things sort of really kind of got too much for some of these recruits, and then they decided to leave, essentially.
Well, what happened? Now I'm curious.
Yeah, well, I guess at one point, Harulf arrived after like 2 or 3 hour drive from where the Northern Brigade is ostensibly based at the sort of the front, he arrived with himself and two other members of the brigade. They were wearing body armor. They had loaded rifles and rocket propelled grenade launchers strapped to their backs, coming into sort of a barracks, I guess, you know, living accommodation for these mostly unarmed fighters, and confronted his second in command and this other Canadian in a very aggressive way, and you know, sort of blasted them for questioning his how he was leading the brigade and that kind of thing, and just sort of generally with his attitude agitating a lot of these people who had come to fight with him, essentially. And I think from that point things just sort of went downhill, at least for this group of 25-30 recruits who had come over at that point.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
I got to ask you, because it's mentioned in your story as well, you know, his personality might have aggravated some people. What about his tattoos that people thought had a different meaning?
Yeah, I mean, and this is a point of contention with Harulf in terms of what they mean. But at one point, people noticed that he had a tattoo of what's called the Black Sun. And this is a tattoo that certainly I'm told by sort of anti-extremism researchers is a symbol that was created by the SS in Germany during the Second World War. It was the symbol of the SS and has been adopted by some neo-Nazis since then, more recently. So the people who saw this were fairly, appalled. One guy said that, his friend sort of saw this and kind of spit on the ground in front of Harulf and said, this is what our grandfathers fought against in the war. Mm-hmm. Now, I should, in total fairness, should say that Harulf takes great exception to his tattoo being characterized that way. He says he's not in any way neo-Nazi, doesn't have any leanings in that sort. And he describes the tattoo as being of sort of a Scandinavian or runic origins, and does not in any way see it as being associated with Nazis. But that being said, fighters who saw this were not pleased, I guess, to say the least.
Fair enough. This is one thing that I'm really interested in because, you've mentioned a few things that you say Harulf disputes. How difficult is it when reporting something like this to try to figure out which of these claims, if any, are true? I mean, it's been hard enough getting reliable information on the war specifically, so I can't imagine this is easy.
Yeah, no, it's not easy. And that's why, I initially talked to the former second in command about his complaints about Harulf. But after that, I talked to, I think, four other recruits, I guess, all of whom were, combat veterans who had originally joined the Norman Brigade and then after these incidents decided to quit. So I did get sort of very similar stories from, five different people. There were incidents and complaints that it was unclear, where the truth really lay, I sort of left out of the story. But, the things that I mentioned, at least the stories were consistent amongst the different recruits that I spoke to. And I should mention, just to be fair, I also spoke to a guy who also goes by nom de guerre, Wally, W-A-L-I, which listeners might have heard of because he got a fair bit of media coverage when he first went over to Ukraine. He's a former Canadian Army. He's a Canadian Army veteran, a sniper. That was his job in the Canadian military. And he went over to Ukraine and initially joined the Norman Brigade and spent about a week with them. And he had a falling out with the commander. I think the last straw was when the commander suggested settling their differences with a fist fight. But that said, he said, you know, I like the guy. He's a good fighter. He's a good warrior. And, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, fighting amongst ourselves. The real enemies are the Russians. So, anyways, so that was another perspective on the guy. And he said you know, his leadership style is kind of very old school military, sort of top down, you know, I'm the boss. And, you know, some might not have, especially being sort of volunteers, some might not have appreciated that.
I want to ask you, as we get to the end here, just for your general takeaways on Canadians traveling over to fight in Ukraine, specifically Herulf and the Norman Brigade, but also just in general, you've talked to a ton of these guys. What kind of impression did they leave you with?
Well, I mean, I think there's a variation. I mean, and it's, I think there's different motivations. Some of the guys I interviewed for this story had belonged to the French Foreign Legion, and they said, you know, our Ukrainian friends from the French Foreign Legion, you know, they're now fighting the Russians, and we didn't want to sit back at home and let them, you know, fight on their own. So that's why we went over. So it's like, you know, their sort of loyalty to their former French Foreign Legion comrades that brought them over. Some obviously just feel that, you know, that it's wrong what Russia is doing, and they want to sort of help Ukraine however they can. In Herulf's case, it's that, and also, you know, he has these family ties to Ukraine. So different motivations. There's a guy here, Chris Eklund. He's a businessman and sort of philanthropist for kind of military related issues. He was helping a lot and trying to get you know, former Canadian interpreters in Afghanistan out of Afghanistan after the Taliban took over. But anyway, he set up a group that's sort of offering support to these foreign fighters going over to Ukraine. So he's really talked to a lot of them and says, you know, a lot of them are totally inexperienced and ill-prepared to become soldiers in Ukraine, you know, have no military experience or very little, you know, and some of them seem to be motivated just by this sort of sense of adventure. They want to get combat experience or, you know, bragging rights for their friends or girlfriends. But clearly there are a lot of Canadians who, you know, sort of feel, you know, a real obligation to go over and help Ukraine.
Last question, what happens to the Norman Brigade next? Where are they now? Are they headed somewhere?
Well, I mean, as far as I can tell, they are, without saying exactly where it is, I think they are close to where there is currently a lot of fighting going on. So I don't think they'll have any trouble finding, you know, battles to take part in. Mm. In terms of their recruitment efforts, I mean, this group has, as I said, has left the brigade and joined the International Legion. One of them, his sort of former second in command, was actually, you know, overseeing the Facebook page and the recruitment and all that. So he's actually, Herulf has now actually got a new Facebook page for the Norman Brigade. So, you know, it's remains to be seen, I guess, how successful he is at recruiting more people. The people who left the brigade say they're recommending against joining the Norman Brigade, but, you know, it remains to be seen how that works out.
Tom, thank you so much for this.
Thank you.
Tom Blackwell, senior reporter with the National Post. That was The Big Story. For more, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Email us hello@TheBigStoryPodcast.ca. And please, however you get in touch with us, if you have a story idea, send it along. We've gotten a couple of great ones recently. We are working on a couple of them. So if you haven't heard yours yet, Just keep listening. We do read every idea and take it to a story meeting. You can find this podcast wherever you like to listen to your podcasts, and you can ask for it on a smart speaker by saying, "Hey, smart speaker, play the Big Story podcast." Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.